informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Hello, this is the annoying Jay Leno, and you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Okay, listeners, welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I'm your show host, Robert. Run your computers and Google Talk1340.com, and you can see us live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com, where you can find out all about us. And if you've missed any of our past shows, check out NostalgicRadioAndCars.com. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, listeners, car guys, car gals, motorcycle guys, motorcycle gals. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. We've got a good show for you tonight, as usual. Well, let me tell you what I did this weekend. This weekend, I actually went over to Melbourne, Florida, and I checked out the American Muscle Car Museum. Now, if you recall, a few weeks ago, we had Herr Piloch on our show, and he is the founder and CEO of the American Muscle Car Museum. Now, the event actually was more than just the car museum itself. It was actually a British and European car show, and there was actually kind of an interesting mix of cars there. Obviously, you had the Porsches, and you had Mercedes, and you had BMWs, and you had some interesting cars. You actually had a DB4 Aston Martin, which was kind of cool. I'd seen that car before. It was actually owned by a NASA scientist kind of guy. Pretty cool. And there was another car there that I thought was very interesting, and that was a 74 Jensen Interceptor Coupe. Interesting color, too. Orange with a black vinyl top, black interior. Most of them were automatics. I think it was a handful of stick shift cars, but pretty much all automatics with 440s in them. Early cars had 383s. And I believe in a 383 car in the early days, like around 1968, you might have been able to get one with a stick, I think. And supposedly there were six known to exist, and or seven or eight or nine or ten. And but they were all right-hand drive. But it'd be a cool car if it was a stick. And they made a number of convertibles as well. But anyway, that was one cool car that I thought there. Then there was a Daimler there, which was really interesting because you don't see those very often. Real nice cabriolet. Actually, my friend Hayes Harris out of Wire World Classics in Vero Beach, it was his car. And then there was another car there that was an original 1952 Allard J2, which was kind of cool, and it had a Chrysler Hemi in it. They either ran Hemis or Cadillac motors, you know, back in the day. So that was probably one of the interesting cars. And then there was an MGTC there, which I thought was kind of cool. I think that'd be kind of a cool car because it got 19-inch wheels, wires on them, but they're all right-hand drive cars. And right-hand drive cars, they're okay. They're kind of cool at first, but then after a while, it's kind of annoying to drive a right-hand drive car in the left-hand drive world. Anyway, nonetheless, once I kind of perused around there and talked to some people and took some pictures, you know, there was obviously run-of-the-mill MGs. There were actually four MGB GTs and one MGC GT, which was kind of cool. You don't see those very often. Volkswagens, obviously, there was a few of those there. There was a Hummer there, you know, but that was for a charity cause. And then going inside the museum was probably the most amazing thing, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to just share with you that there were some really, really, really cool cars, and you definitely need to go to the AmericanMuscleCarMuseum.com, check out their webpage, find out when they have events going on there, which is usually from like the fall till about May. Then it gets too hot. They don't do anything over there. Well, I don't blame them because there's not a lot of things that you want to do in the heat here in Florida. Anyway, it's bad enough. We got to breathe that humidity. Anyway, when I went out in the museum, 400 cars, absolutely incredible, amazing display. The largest collection of Ford GTs in the country. When you walk in, that's what you see. But what I thought was interesting is he actually had this one car, and it was a 66 Ford GT40, an original one, but one of two aluminum body cars. And we actually interviewed, I believe the gentleman's name was Alex. We had him on the show. And the car was an Amelia. The car was a Pebble. And then it got auctioned off. And then this gentleman added it to his collection. And what was interesting is it was of Alaman colors, which was red and gold, kind of like a burgundy gold color. And then they came out with a commemorative edition for GT. They call it the Heritage Edition, but it's commemorative of some kind. And it commemorates that particular car. He has one of each. And it was actually copied off his car. So that's pretty cool. And then when you go inside, it's just spotless. You've got, I don't know, there's a lot of it's 130,000 square feet. Cars are all nice and neat, perfect. Cars on lifts, cars on the ground. You name it, it's there. Camaros, Mustangs, Shelbys, Bosses, Hellcats, Superbirds, Daytona Chargers, Vipers, gobs of Porsches, Porsche tractors. You actually had the big boys there too. I haven't seen those in a long time. That's pretty rare to see one of those. And but just an amazing collection of cars. Schwinn crate bikes. I think he had all of them from, you know, the Apple Crate, the Orange Crate, the Lemon Peeler, the Grey Ghost, the Pea Picker, and I can't remember them all, but they were all there, which is pretty cool. And some military exhibits as well. So it's definitely worth going over there, participating in an event, and he does everything. I mean, he does car, you know, sports cars, muscle cars, Corvettes, Porsches, Mustangs, even electric cars. They're actually doing that this weekend, I think. Just an assortment of cars. So if you go to the website and check it all out, you'll find an event there certainly that appeals to you. Like 15 or 20 bucks to get inside the museum, but it's definitely well worth it. So the car shows are cool, but the museum's amazing. So it's one of the finest collections I've seen of cars, and pretty much 60s, 70s, and that's pretty much what he has. There might have been a Grand National in there, but I didn't see one. And then, of course, the Mercury, the prototype car, that was in there. And there was a convertible Turnpike Cruiser in there, which was really cool, too. So he had some pretty amazing cars, so definitely check that out. I will be going in detail on that soon on one of our other shows. But we got a couple of guests coming on tonight. We're going to be talking about motorcycles, and so I want to get going with that. And we'll be talking about some other events. In fact, this weekend, what we've been talking about that is riding into history over in St. Augustine. Definitely need to check that out. So tune into the show, or stay tuned to the show, and find out more about what's going on. All right? Also, don't forget to follow us on social media, in particular Facebook, Nostalgic Radio and Cars, Gulfstream Motorsports. I have pictures posted up there from the event this past weekend at the American Muscle Car Museum over there in Melbourne and the British and European Car Show. You're tuned into Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
The corners, uncapped feds, it seems. Red hair and black leather, my favorite color scheme. And he pulled around behind. And down to Box Hill. Did it right. Says James to Red Molly, is a ring for your right hand. But I tell you in earnest, I'm a dangerous man. For I fought with a law since I was 17. I robbed a many a man to get my Vincent machine. Now I'm 21 years, I might make 22. And I don't mind dying, but for the love of you. And if fate should break my stride, then I'll give you my Vincent to
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Porsche fans, bike fans, car guys, everybody. Hey, we're back and you're tuned into Nostalgic Radio and Cars. And this weekend is a fantastic motorcycle event coming up, and it's called Riding into History. I've been there a number of times over the years. And with us tonight, we have the chief judge. Welcome to the show, Harris Turner. How are you?
I'm great, Robert. Thanks for having me, and thanks for having Riding into History. We really appreciate it. We're a fantastic motorcycle concourse being held this weekend. Actually, it's Saturday, April 20th in St. Augustine. at the Classic Car Museum. It'll be a fantastic event. The weather's supposed to be good. There's over 200 classic motorcycles, at least 35 years old or older.
Well, now that's interesting. So it used to be at the, World of Golf is where it used to be. So now it's at a new location?
Yes, that's correct. We used to be, for the past 23 years, we were at the World Golf Village in St. Augustine around the lake. However, the World Golf Village was run by the World Golf Museum, and their lease expired, and so the venue went back to the county, and the county actually couldn't figure out how to start leasing it out for events, and so we were stuck. But the Classic Car Museum of St. Augustine came to our rescue, and it is a fantastic automobile museum, and it's a fantastic venue. It's not as fancy as the World Golf Village, but in actuality, it's much better because it's laid out for car and motorcycle events. It should be a great venue.
Interesting. Okay, so where exactly is this automobile museum? I'll be honest with you, I'm not even familiar with it.
It is on US 1, just a little south of St. Augustine. It's at 4730 US 1, St. Augustine. It's right on US 1, and it's easy to get to off of 95.
Okay. So how many cars are in this museum?
There, I would say there's probably 75 to 100 cars in the museum.
Basically, if I show up for the motorcycle event, can I participate in the car museum as well? Can we go in there?
It is a separate admission for the car museum. But
okay.
Yes, the museum will be open. They are running a special price this weekend for spectators who want to also come into the museum. Our event is different in that we charge the spectators. We don't charge the entrants. We feel that the entrants are donating their time and their vehicles and that they shouldn't be charged, but the spectators are the ones that are enjoying it. And so they are being charged to get into the event, and it's $15 a person, and it's well, well worth it.
Okay, and that's actually a good idea because, you know, so many times, you know, there's so many car shows where people, you know, they charge the guy that's bringing the car, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, you know, we're the draw, so why are we paying? Technically, you should have sponsors to cover the whole event, and then, you know, that makes everybody happy. But that's another discussion for another day. Let's talk about the event. So give us a rundown of some of the motorcycles and the featured mark and also the Grand Marshal.
Okay, first of all, I want to say this about the event.
Okay.
And we are a 501c3. We're a charitable organization. All of our money goes to Canine for Warriors, which provides support dogs for veterans, police, fire, and first responders. So no one on our staff is paid. Everybody pays their own way. In fact, we all pay our way to the banquet and to the ride and everything. In the past, we have given over $600,000 to Canine for Warriors and other charities.
That's beautiful.
So
that's great.
Everything we collect after we pay expenses goes to our charity. No one takes a salary. No one takes any money out. In fact, we've often figured out that the money that comes out of our pockets to provide this event, we probably could do Canine for Warriors anyway. So we actually display each year at Barber Vintage Museum, which everyone should go to.
Mm-hmm.
The Barber Vintage Festival, the Barber Museum staff is so excited about our charity and about our show that they provide us a space in the fan zone for to set up a tent and actually display there and promote the organization. We are the premier all-motorcycle event in the United States. The Quail motorcycle event used to be all motorcycles, but now they're including cars. And I used to say that we were the premier all-motorcycle event on the East Coast, and Quail was on the West Coast, but now that they're showing cars, I say we're the premier all-motorcycle event in the United States.
Okay. So give us an example of some of the motorcycles that will be there on display this year.
We'll have 200 motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
They're divided into classes. The largest class, which is very interesting, used to be the British class, but now as the population ages, the Japanese class has completely taken over, and that will be the largest class of motorcycles. And this year, our mark is Japanese bikes. And as you know, riding into the sun is the motto.
I presume we're going to have Hondas, Suzukis, Kawasakis, Yamahas, and probably some Japanese motorcycles that I've never even heard of.
Yes, and as chief judge, there'll be some that I have not heard of. But that is always interesting. This year, our Grand Marshal is Henry Degas, and he has been a successful motorcycle racer, team manager, and promoter. He is a Florida person. Mm-hmm. And everyone should remember him. He started in 1964 in Gainesville, Florida. His first motorcycle was a Mustang, which was a lot of our first motorcycles.
That's a scooter.
Yes. He is the 1983 and 1984 AAMRR expert Formula One Southern Region Road Racing Champion. He participated in the Macau GP. He's just well known in the industry.
Okay. Now, of the motorcycles that are going to be there, what is the cutoff? Okay. So in other words, like when you're, these are basically vintage motorcycles. So is the cutoff like 74, 75? Because with cars, technically it would be 72 and back, maybe 74. So how does it work with motorcycles?
Our cutoff, they have to be at least 35 years old. That's the same cutoff that the Antique Motorcycle Club of America uses to identify antique motorcycles. So it's a moving date. So it's not like 1975 or later,
okay,
and it stays at 1975. If you have a motorcycle that's at least 35 years old, you can enter it. We have made exceptions for really unusual bikes or a newer race bike or a bike that is just so appealing that you don't want to not show it. So we do make one or two exceptions.
Okay. So now if I want to participate, what's the procedure if I want to submit a bike for display? What is the qualifications? What do I need to do?
Well, for this year, our registration is closed. It actually closed last night. Okay. We have over 200 motorcycles limited entered. Our limit was 200 bikes based on the area and how we like to show them. And we don't like to crowd the bikes in there. We like to have the bikes kind of spread out so the spectators can see the bike, have a good view of the bike. So our limit was 200, and we reached the limit last night, and we have closed registration. So this year, you can't enter a bike.
What's the procedure? So I submit the bike, and then do you guys vet the bike? I mean, in other words, because you want to make sure it's the bike, and do the bikes have to run?
Yes, the bikes have to run. Yes, you submit an application with a picture.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing we do is classify the bike. Then we vet the bike to make sure that it fits the class and that it's what it says it is and that it's a nice bike. We very rarely will just reject a bike right off. It has to be a pretty
bad shape,
rough stuff. Yeah, to be rejected. Our goal is to show the bikes to the people, to have a large variety of rare bikes, but also a large variety of common bikes that have been restored or an original shape, so that when you view the bike, you can say, oh, I had one of these. And you'd be surprised at how many of the spectators actually say, this was my first bike, or this was my first motorcycle. I had this one. This is the same color, and they'll start talking to the owners. The owners will be by their bikes most of the time. And so they'll strike up a conversation with the owner about the motorcycle because that's the motorcycle they owned. Or, and I say this, as an owner, our first vintage bike is usually the bike that we could not afford or that our mother wouldn't let us buy.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so now do you have what we would call a survivor class? So, like, for example, if I have a vintage bike and it's got period modifications to it, and it's pretty much the way I rode it back in the day. So it's not pretty, but it's not a piece of junk. It actually runs and drives, but it's just got that vintage period, I used it edge to it. Is that acceptable? Do you have a class for that?
We actually have a class called the Originals. It has to be an original bike. That's what we would call our survivor class.
Okay.
A bike that's unrestored and untouched. Now, the bikes that you're talking about, they just go in the normal class.
Oh, okay.
and those bikes will be judged. Oftentimes, those bikes are a winner or a runner-up just because of either their rarity, the way they were restored, or the way they were ridden. And so, yes, not all of our bikes are pristine, perfect bikes right out of the showroom. If you have entered a bike, you're entitled to go on what we call the Grand Marshal's Ride on Friday. The Grand Marshal's Ride leaves the hotel and goes to K9 for Warriors, which is really an interesting stop. That's our water stop. And then we go to a restaurant on the ocean on A1A. And the reason I brought this up is because for the ride at the K9s and at the restaurant, we pick a bike which we call the Spirit of Riding into History. Now, that motorcycle is what you are talking about. That motorcycle is one that the owner has ridden for a long time, has a lot of history, and it may not be pristine, but it is ridden and shown and loved by the owner. And that bike is the Spirit of Riding into History bike.
That would be a problem with mine because mine are dirt bikes, so I probably wouldn't be able to put it on the street.
No, actually, yeah, we ride in a group. You rode it on the street, and it could make the 60 miles. You could probably get away with it.
Oh, okay.
I never advise anybody to break the law, but, you know, in a group like that, you're very rarely stopped.
Gotcha.
Because the police are just as in awe of the bikes as everybody else.
All right, so tell us about the dogs now. So basically, you provide dogs, correct?
The K9 for Warriors, yes.
Okay. What type of dogs are they?
Actually, most of the dogs come from the pounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they are support dogs, veterans, and other personnel, and they actually have living quarters. And then for you to get your dog, you have to go down there, you pick a dog, and you live with the dog at K9 for Warriors. I think it's for 6 weeks, and they train you and the dog.
Really?
And yes, we have also on Friday night, we have a Grand Marshal's dinner where the Grand Marshal speaks. And also we'll have one of the recipients from the dogs come up and they'll tell you their story. And there are many occasions where it brings tears to your eyes when the man or woman tells the story about how this dog affected their life. So, and that's why we've selected it as our charity at this time.
So basically it's a pet and it just makes their life better because now they've got their best friend, a dog, and that's their new companion.
That's right. That's their support companion. Yes. You know, they share affection and it helps them get through life when they're having a rough spot. So it's awe-inspiring. It really is.
It's for a good cause.
For a great cause, yes.
All right. Hey, Harris, tell us a little bit about what you do. Now, you're a judge. So what do you have to do? What's your capacity now as far as, I mean, how do you rank? How do you judge? Tell us how you judge.
How do you judge? You know, we have 8 classes of motorcycles. We give out best in class, and then we give merit awards, 3 merit awards for in the class. And we have volunteer judges who are knowledgeable for the bike in their class. And so usually we have 2 to 4 judges for each class, and the judges will go down. The judges have a sheet on each motorcycle, and they will review the bike for various aspects of the motorcycle: paint, engine, cleanliness, originality, rideability, things like that. And they will rank the bike from best in class, but we don't do second, third, fourth.
Okay.
What we do is do award of merit, because when you, after best in class, the bikes are pretty equal. And so we don't think it's second place is that exciting, but an award of merit we think is very exciting. And that shows that your bike is outstanding for the class, but it may not be best in class.
No, I think that's fair. I like that. That's good.
So, and then we have the best in show. We have a committee of 4 judges who have judged best in show for many years, and they are experienced restorers and extremely knowledgeable about motorcycles. And that's all they do is they're in charge of selecting the best in show. Then the Grand Marshal picks a bike that he likes. We have the original bike. We call it the Preservation Award. It's the bike that's in original shape. And we have the best Japanese. And we have a special award for BMWs. Okay. And each one of these awards are selected by people who are knowledgeable in that make. So our judges are pretty knowledgeable, and most of them have been judges for many, many years.
Okay. What is your specialty?
My specialty is British motorcycles, and I collect BSA motorcycles.
Okay.
Which they quit making in 1971. I tell everybody they quit making when they people talk, start asking me about BSAs. I say, well, they quit making them long before you were born. My first BSA was a 441 Victor. And as I say, it's the bike that I couldn't afford. And also, my mother wouldn't let me buy if I could have afforded it. So I'll tell this story. So we were coming home from church one day, my wife and me and two boys in the car, and we went down this, it was like 2 weeks before Christmas, and we were going down this side street. Why we were on this street, I don't know, and the BSA 441 Victor was leaning up against the pole, and I'm not sure anybody now listening knows what this bike is, but it's a beautiful chrome and yellow motorcycle. It is one of the sexiest motorcycles you'll ever see as far as a vintage bike goes. So I slammed on my brakes, stopped the car, turned to my wife and said, if that bike is for sale, I'm going to buy it. So I knocked on the door, talked to the guy. It was a rental apartment. And he said, yes, he needed money for Christmas and the bike is for sale. And we negotiated a price, and I said, okay, will you take my check? And he said, no. And I said, yes, I'm going to buy the bike right now. If you want to sell this bike, you've got to take my check. And he said, well, I don't know. And I said, well, look, I just live right down the street. If this check bounces, I said, you hold the title. If the check bounces, you have me arrested for stealing your bike, and I'll go to jail. But if not, in a week, I'll come back and get the title from you. So we negotiated a bit further, and he said, okay, I'll take your check. Little did I know that in the car, everybody was going crazy. They thought I was crazy. Both boys were going, what's Daddy doing? What's happening here? They were especially excited when I went back to the car and told my wife, you drive home, I'm riding the motorcycle.
Oh, wow, that was cool. That's a cool story. Yes, definitely.
That was my first BSA. And at one time, I had 35 of them, but I've thinned out my collection quite a bit now, and I don't have quite as many. 35 are hard to handle in a garage.
Oh, I can imagine. Well, hey, Harris, we're just about up against the clock here. So real quick, one more time, again, I want to thank you for coming on the show. If people want to find out more about Writing into History, how do they go about doing it?
They can go to our website, writingintohistory.org. Writing into history, all one word, .org.
And they
can tell you everything about it.
Okay, and they can find out where and when. And that is this weekend on Saturday, correct?
This weekend, Saturday. The gates open at 10 a.m. It's at the Classic Car Museum of St. Augustine. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate you listening to all my stories.
No, that's great. It's what the show's all about, stories and human interest. And this week, it's about motorcycles. So again, Harris, thank you very much, and I will see you on Saturday.
Have a great day. Talk to you later.
Okay, yes, thank
we'll
you very
see
much.
You on Saturday. Mm-hmm. All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, listeners, don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. We have another guest coming on, and we'll be talking more about vintage motorcycles and motorcycle events. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, sports fans, car guys, motorcycle guys, it's time to introduce our special guest for the evening. Since we're on a motorcycle thing, because we got Riding into History taking place this weekend, I have another friend of mine who is the museum technician for the fabulous Barber Motorsports Museum. Delighted to welcome to the show this evening, Zeke Dazoo. Zeke, welcome to the show this evening. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
So you are actually riding back from a special event that just took place out in Austin, Texas at COTA. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that event that you guys were just at and all the fun stuff that took place.
Yeah, so the museum had a really big announcement this past weekend at the Circuit of the Americas. We got invited out by COTA themselves to display a few motorcycles within the museum and celebrating 75 years of Grand Prix racing. And the event itself kind of lined up perfectly we were able to announce that the great Kenny Roberts and his son, Kenny Roberts Jr., are putting their motorcycles in the museum. Their 1980 OW48 Yamaha 500 and the championship-winning 2000 RGV 500. And they're the only two father sons to both win in the premier class of motorcycle racing. And so we had the opportunity to acquire these bikes and, you know, tell their story and tell the story of the motorcycles and how awesome of people they are. And along with the motorcycles, we were able to announce that Kenny Roberts Sr. is going to be the Grand Marshal of the 2024 Barber Vintage Festival, which is a huge honor for us to have someone of such prestige, especially being the world's largest motorcycle museum and our largest event of the year. He's going to be our Grand Marshal, hanging out, talking about his bikes and doing some other cool stuff with us.
Wow, that's exciting. So that's the Barber Motorsports Motorcycle Festival in the fall. Now, was he there at COTA with you guys and part of the display?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So both Kenny Roberts Sr. and Kenny Roberts Jr. were present in the event, and they spoke a little bit about their love for the museum and how excited they are for us to be able to preserve their bikes and preserve their story, help refine the museum itself and add 500cc motorcycles. You know, Grand Prix motorcycles, which we didn't have. And so we're further completing the timeline of 75 years of GP racing.
Okay. Now, this event that you were at COTA, Circuits of the Americas, that was a GP race, correct?
Yes, sir. So it's the Americas GP. It's where the premier class of MotoGP races every year. They've been going since 2013, and it's a fantastic race. This year especially, I believe, was the best MotoGP race. There was great battles and a fantastic outcome. We were really, really happy to be there and really fortunate to have, you know, COTA have us out there.
Okay, now, is a MotoGP bike and a superbike, are they two different bikes with the same class? Or for our listeners, give us the rundown.
So the best way I describe it is the MotoGP bike are similar to the prototype series that is ran in, let's say, Le Mans. They're non-production, boutique, high-class motorcycles running 300 horsepower, weighing 300 pounds, doing 218 miles an hour on the back straight. Whereas, let's say, the World Superbike or even AMA Moto America Superbike, those bikes are similar and more similar to the ones you can go pick up off the showroom floor. Really, the only similarities between the MotoGP bikes and World Superbikes are the logo. They're very, very deeply engineered motorcycles, and you can tell just by looking at them. The modern era of MotoGP motorcycles look like freakish alien spacecraft because we're in the era of aero, and they're applying wings and similar aerodynamics that you see in the Formula One series. Two-wheeled machines.
Okay, so like the motorcycle that you have there, the Pentagalli, the 2020 bike that I appraised, the Ducati, that's a super bike as opposed to a GP bike, correct?
Correct. That's Scott Redding's World Superbike. So what that bike is a Ducati Pentagalli V4 RS, and that is a little bit, it is loosely based off of the Pentagalli V4R, which is the homologated production bike that allows them to run in the World Superbike Series. But that bike is full of carbon, titanium, and magnesium high-tech logging devices and the best of the best equipment whenever it comes to brakes and suspension. It is a machine in a league of its own, but nowhere near the class of MotoGP.
Really? Let's say I'm a car guy. If you had to do a comparison, a GP bike, a super bike, put that in car terms for us, because most of my listeners are car guys.
MotoGP is Formula One.
Oh.
You know, MotoGP is the Formula One of motorcycles. There's no other league that's coming close to the lap times and the performance those guys are getting out of those bikes.
Okay.
Whereas, let's say World Superbike is similar to the GT3 racing that you would see at Le Mans, the 8 hours of Suzuka and whatnot.
Would it be close to like IndyCar then? Could you say that? Would that be, I mean, one Formula One, IndyCar, GP, Superbike?
I guess you could. I'm not too familiar with IndyCar racing to be able to put a comparison in there.
Well, because they look alike. They're open wheel, but an IndyCar is a completely different car than a Formula One car. Formula One car is marginally more sophisticated and faster.
That within itself is a good comparison. They both have four wheels, but they're two completely different machines.
All right, so let me ask you this then. Because IndyCar, in my opinion, and many others, is basically expensive spec racing, where Formula One is not really spec racing. There's still a lot of innovation in it. So would it be fair to say that a GP bike still used, whether it's Ducati, whether it's Aprilia, whether it's Yamaha or Suzuki, whoever, they basically have prototype technology and it's proprietary and there's no limitations?
That's exactly right. They're all operating under the same rule book, but all throwing in their different flavors of what they want, you know, but it is, that's exactly right. It's prototype technology that's proprietary to each brand and not shared with anyone else.
Okay. Well, that I understand. That makes sense. To me, that's racing.
Yeah.
So now this event at COTA was a GP race. So these are basically bikes that race in Europe that were racing just for this event in Austin, Texas at COTA, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, does the Superbike class, that group, do they actually race at COTA as well?
I don't believe so. Moto America, I believe, does race at COTA, but World Superbike, the international series, does not race in the Americas.
Okay.
Or North America, at least.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, Zeke, what else did you guys have out there? Just those few bikes, the Kenny Roberts bikes, or did you bring some other stuff out there to Texas to show?
So the Kenny Roberts bikes were the unveiling. They were the special guests. But to mix it up and add, you know, a series of 75 years of championship winning, we had Giacomo Agostini's number one 500cc triple championship winning bike. We had John Turti's four-cylinder 500cc MV Agusta championship bike. We had Carlo Ubaldi's 125 Ballabero racer that was winning in 1953. And so from 1953 all the way up to mid-70s, we had a collection of motorcycles to, you know, demonstrate the evolution of GP racing and what it's come to. So spectators were able to come in and see the motorcycles and see what we started with in the 50s and what we're looking at now in 2024 with these wicked machines on track.
Did you guys have a separate booth there? Did they give you an enclosed area, or how was your display set up?
So we had a bike staged two bikes at a time across three different rooms. And so we only brought six bikes, but we the suites up in the paddock area, we presented them with banners and stanchions that described what each motorcycle was. And we staged them in a way that we felt appropriate, you know, each bike associated with each other.
Okay. Any notable people there that you ran into while you were out there at COTA?
Yeah, I mean, several familiar motorcycle legends were out there and there to support their friends, Kenny Roberts, and introducing. We had, you know, world champion Wayne Rainey and the king of Daytona himself, Scott Russell, and Kevin Schwantz, and, you know, many familiar faces that were in the area in order. You know, they were there for the GP, but also there, fortunately, to be with the Roberts family and, you know, witness barber history, witness the preservation and the introduction of a modern era of motorcycles into the museum.
Okay. So overall, the MotoGP, is that basically a three-day of racing event there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Are there
Oh, yeah. You got qualifying and race, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday in that order.
Okay. Is there support races, motorcycle races too, or is it the big focus on the GP race itself?
Yeah, so there's the beginner, I'll use beginner loosely, but the beginner class of Moto 3, which is 250cc machines, that is more of a spec class. They're very, very similar to each other, and it's kind of rider focused. Those machines are only 250cc's, making 60 horsepower. And they sound like a swarm of bees when they go by you, and they're so tightly packed because they're all the same machine. And then you have the Moto 2 class, which is 765cc machines making closer to 170 horsepower. And that's closer to GP bikes, but nowhere near the caliber. And it's kind of a stair-step process to get to Moto GP, right? You start in Moto 3, you do well there, you get picked up by a Moto 2 team, you do well there, you get picked up by a GP team. And so, yeah, there was support races, and Moto America also had their King of the Baggers event out there, which is fun to watch. It's very similar. They look like, you know, your Harley Road Glide, but it's nowhere near that. They're spec race bikes that are nothing like the thing you can buy on the floor.
Oh, really? It's called the Bagger Race Class?
So, yeah, it's called the King of the Baggers. It's a pretty cool series. It's pretty fresh and new. I think it's only maybe 3 years old, but it started with a racer doing his own custom bike and then evolved into a race series because retired racers were thinking, well, that's a cool bike to race, so let me swing a leg over it and go beat my buddies, yeah.
Interesting. So in the Moto 3 class or Moto GP 3 class there, you know, the entry level, how many bikes were in that field, would you say?
A lot. Because it's a smaller displacement and smaller size, they're able to fit more bikes on the grid. But an exact number, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
So would it be fair to say they got 20, 30 bikes on the grid at the time, or is that too many?
20 would be safe. Anywhere 20. From 20 to maybe 25, yeah.
Okay, and then the number two class, Moto 2, how many bikes?
It's a little bit less, but I would say, 15.
15, okay.
Less, and then it kind of stair steps from there. I think there's 12 or 13 MotoGP bikes.
All right, and those bikes have how much horsepower and how many cylinders displacement?
So the GP bikes are limited to 1,000 cc's and four cylinders. Most, I think all manufacturers are running four cylinders, mm-hmm. all in different arrangements. I think the only two arrangements are V4 and inline four, and then most of them are making upwards of 290, and I think a few are making 300. 300 horsepower on 300-pound machines. I mean, you do the math. That's wicked.
That's crazy. Okay, so now these bikes, now in terms of marks, brands, Ducati, Aprilia, Suzuki, Yamaha, and so on, what are some of the top bikes? Which brand? Is it still Ducati pretty much right now?
So for a while there, the Japanese were whooping butt. All throughout the mid-2000s, as we've lived through, Honda and Yamaha were the king of every ring. They were dominating with their inline four machines. But Ducati has been chipping away and developing a motorcycle. They were the first people to introduce the wings. And they've now developed the bike so well that even the motor is outgunning all the rest of the manufacturers. But most of the bikes that are running V4 arrangements are killing everyone. The inline four bikes, the Honda and Yamahas, are falling behind. But Ducati, Aprilia, and KTM are really chomping at the bit at each other and swapping places every race.
Now, for our listeners, I don't know how many people know this or not, but Ducati's actually owned by Volkswagen, right?
Correct. I believe so. Yeah, they're part of the Volkswagen group. At least their manufacturer is.
Okay, so would it be fair to say that, Porsche being kind of, the top dog in the GT car world, that probably the couple Porsche engineers got a hold of a couple of Ducatis and said, you know what? I think we can make these bikes really, really fast.
I would actually assume it to be Audi is one of the yes. lead sponsors of the MotoGP team.
Oh, really? Audi is.
Oh, yeah. And so, everyone wants their hand in the cookie jar of each motorsport. Those engineers get bored of what they're doing. And so I'm sure there's some crossover and influence from the car industry into the bike industry and vice versa. But I couldn't say for certain.
Okay, cool. All right, now let's talk about you for a second here. Let's talk a little bit about your background, motorcycle-wise. And because you actually worked for a Ducati dealership at some point. And did you do any racing?
No, I never did any racing. I've been on track a couple of times, but never head on head going against anyone competitively. But yeah, I started building motorcycles whenever I was 10 or 9, rather, with my dad. And from there, it kind of snowballed into the position I'm in now.
So you actually did one, and it turned up on a YouTube video, or then you wound up on TV, and then there's this Brian Fuller connection? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so whenever I was 10, my dad and I had built our first motorcycle. It was a 1975 Honda CB200 inspired by the cafe racer culture. And we started our, public journey by going to, I believe it was the 9th Barber Vintage Festival. So that festival is held, mid to late October every year. And we went out there just to hang out with friends that we met online. And it was kind of our first event, putting our name out there and putting the bike that we built out there for the public to see. And word caught wind pretty quick that some kid was wrenching on two wheels. And I got looked at by a volunteer at the Vintage Festival. And he said, "You built that?" "Yes, sir." Me and my dad put this together. And he goes, I want you to meet somebody. And he brings us into the museum. And man, I wish I could remember his name. I've been fighting for the last year or so to remember his name. But he brings us down to the basement where some guy that thought he knew how to weld was putting on a seminar for Lincoln Electric alongside Mark Prosser, and that some guy was Brian Ford. And Brian was, laying down beads for the public and running a little class, quick and dirty 30-minute class. And at the end of the class, I introduced myself. I said, "Hi, I'm Zeke, and I know how to oxy-acetylene weld." And he goes, "Oh, yeah? Well, prove it." Kind of first time meeting the guy, he stuck it to me. And so there was a torch and rod there, and I showed him that I could weld. And then he was like, okay, you ever TIG before? I said, no, sir, never TIG before. And so we sat down, and he taught me how to TIG weld. And he kind of took note of my name and who I was. And a couple years later, almost exactly a year later, my dad and I get a little email, an invitation from a show called Naked Speed that was on the Velocity Channel. It was formerly known, previously known as Cafe Racer TV, but, you know, stuff happens and name changes. And they invited us to build a motorcycle for the TV show. And lo and behold, the host of the show is Brian Fuller. And so I couldn't help but to think there was, you know, some influence there. And so we did. We said, yeah, we'll build a bike for the show. This would be exciting. And so over a few months, we built a bike, and Fuller came out to the house with the TV crew. And we filmed the beginning of a bike we called Victoria. And the goal was to take a 74 Honda CB175 and go 100 miles an hour with it. A bike that originally had about 12 horsepower. We built the motor out to 25 and put a Dustin fairing, a big vintage looking fairing on it, and eventually took it out to Circuit of the Americas, which we were talking about previously. And we had Ben and Eric Bostrom were the test riders for these motorcycles in the show. Ben and Eric are legendary names in the world superbike, and they're brothers. And they threw a leg over a bike that, you know, some 13-year-old built. And they get back and they get into the pits and they tell me it was the scariest 100 miles an hour they ever did. And that's a pretty big accomplishment.
Wow.
But from that, my relationship with Brian evolved. And we struck it off pretty well. And he saw a lot in me and poured a lot into me. And I'm very appreciative of that. And we later built a motorcycle in collaboration together. And he taught me, we went in real deep depth of fabrication and design and, you know, putting together a truly custom hand-built motorcycle. Since then we've been good buddies.
Well, good. Well, now you're from Texas originally, right? So now you're full time at Barber Motorsports in Alabama, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So I was born and raised in Red Oak, Texas, just south of Dallas. And through my motorcycle journey, whenever I was younger, I made a lot of friends, one of them being Brian Case, who is now the director of the Barber Motorsports Museum. Brian is really pushing an image at Barber for the younger crowd. And Barber has a great education program where we have kids come in and they learn about motorcycles, and they break one down and they put it back together, and they learn the different, you know, aspects of physics and how motorcycles operate and how they don't just fall over. And because of that, Brian knew me since I was about 10 or 11. And he reached out and asked me what I was doing. I wasn't doing anything important at the time. And he offered me the position at Barber Motorsports to come help out with the cars and bikes. And of course, I accept, because it is a dream job and the greatest place to be at if you're a motorhead. And so I just recently started about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, and we're already rocking and rolling.
Super. So now, a museum technician, what exactly does that job description entail?
So as a museum technician, it's my responsibility to preserve and keep the bikes running and alive. For the most part, we keep the bikes looking pretty and make sure that we can tell the story and document the processes that manufacturers went through to come up with motorcycles, or document the people behind them, more importantly, and make sure like the personalities and the faces are recognized and, you know, shared with the rest of the world. And so we do a lot of documentation and making sure that a bike's history and a bike's story is presented appropriately and accurately to our audience and the patrons that come into the museum.
How many motorcycles are on display at Barber Motorsports?
On display, we have roughly 1,400 to 1,500.
Wow. And then and they range from what?
Everything. You think about it, we probably got it.
Okay, but for like the very first motorcycle to the latest and greatest, right? Would that be a fair statement?
So I believe we have a replica of the very first motorcycle made. that, you know, we know about, which would be late 1800s to the most modern bike being a 2021 superbike. So everything, we hit every decade and more, you know.
So we're talking street bikes, dirt bikes, trials bikes, scooters. What else do they have?
Not so much on the scooter side. We got some coming in, but...
Like an old Cushman or a Mustang or something like that. Those are basically considered scooters,
sure.
Right?
Sure. It is most definitely motorcycle focused.
Motorcycles. Okay. Got it. Well, you know what? It's been great having you on the show here for a few minutes. People want to find out about more Barber Motorsports. How do they go about doing that?
So you can follow us anywhere. Barber Museum on Instagram or Barber Motorsports Park on Instagram and Facebook. My handle is Zeke.Mizzou on Instagram, and we're constantly sharing what we're doing and the events coming up. We're located in Leeds, Alabama. You can come on by and check out the greatest collection of two wheels you'll ever see. And I stand by that. And even if you don't give a crap about motorcycles or anything, the place itself is a work of art and will take your breath. I mean, Robert, you know this. You've been there enough times to walk in and know that there's always something new, and it'll take your breath away no matter who you are.
I say this all the time. You know, it's like a bucket list. Before you die, you need to go to Barber Motorsports.
Yeah, and even in the afterlife, you better come check it out.
Because you don't know what's going to be there. That's right. Well, let me ask you this.
You're right.
How many motorcycle events do they have during the year? I know they do car stuff because I was just up there last weekend and you had the Mustang thing going at the same time. And I know there's a lot of Porsche stuff going on. But aside from the car stuff, how many actual motorcycle events do they have a year that families can participate in besides the Motorsports Festival in the fall?
So in the spring, just coming up here at the end of May, we have an event called Small Bore. Barber Small Bore is one of the coolest events of all time because it's limited, as it says, to small CC motorcycles. So anything 250 CCs and under, you can register and bring in and ride around the park and participate in the events and stuff we got going on. And other than that, we have Moto America coming this year. I think the week after Small Bore, if you want to make a week-long vacation to Alabama and see cool, you know, two of the coolest events that you can see in America. But other than that, we have, Barber Vintage Fest at the end of
October.
And I will be one to say that Barber Vintage Festival rivals, you know, the likes of Daytona Bike Week and Sturgis in the sense of excitement and different flavors of bikes that come through and the people that you meet. I mean, it's where I started and where many people get their inspirations for continuing the love and the passion of riding two wheels.
Absolutely.
The place really carries a spirit that everyone walks away with, and you got to check it out, you know.
Well, not to mention at the Fall Festival, too, there's a big swap meet, and people bring bikes there. So if you've never had a bike and you got interested in a bike, you could actually walk away or ride away on a new motorcycle as well, right?
100%. I've been guilty of doing that. For a good bit there, my dad and I would finish a bike, take it to Barber, and then bring another one home from the swap meet. It's the swap meet is probably one of the most unique in the sense that people understand that Barber has interesting stuff and stuff that you don't see anywhere else. And so they feel it appropriate to put their stuff up for sale at the same place. And so that, you know, side case or suspension or part that you've been looking for decades is more than likely going to be there at the swap meet.
Yeah, like a gas tank for an Elsinore 250.
Yeah, I don't know where any of those are.
Okay, well, anyway, we'll look at it. All right, so Zeke, I want to thank you for hanging out with us here at Nostalgic Radio Cars. It was great. We'll have you on again, especially sometime between now and the fall. We'll talk more. Say hi to Brian. I know he's driving, and he's got to pay attention to the road there because you got a lot of priceless treasures back there, and we certainly wouldn't want to distract anybody. So at any rate, keep your eyes on the road and stay focused. I want to thank you guys for hanging out with us again here at Nostalgic Radio Cars. And you never know, I might be up there next month. Rumor has it there might be a motorcycle or two that I might have to appraise. And, you know, so, and I always look forward to going back to Barber Motorsports. I mean, the museum's incredible. The grounds are unbelievable. The racetrack is very technical and very cool. I mean, it's like you just went into God's country when you go up there to Barber Motorsports. And it should be on everybody's bucket list, everybody's wish list. Hey, thanks again, guys. Have a safe trip. All the best to you. And we'll see you soon.
Of course. Thank you, Robert.
Okay, I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Don't forget to check us out here every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Tell your friends. Hey, get out there and drive your car. But you know what? This weekend, I think what you need to do is ride your motorcycle. I want to see everybody over there riding into history in a couple months or in the fall. Let's all go hang out at Barber Motorsports Museum. It's a great place. In the meantime, stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family. Bring on!